It's time to set the moon macabre for our special edition Halloween podcast. We're giving you the most maniacal ideas to create a truly wicked scene for your next spectacular event. From ghastly appetizers, deadly desserts, and the most ghoulish of cocktails, to the creepiest decor that will surely put your guests 6 feet under with the chills. So join us Friday, September 10th for the frights and the fun as we conjure up the most morbid party for your All Hallows Eve celebration. Where? All right here, right now, on the Morbid Homemakers podcast, exclusively on iTunes. Trust me, you won't want to miss it. This episode is to die for. Food, garden, holidays, a clean home, a healthy home. All right here, right now. The Morbid Homemakers podcast, now available for download on iTunes. Hello, this is Brian, and thank you so much for tuning into the Morbid Homemakers podcast. This is episode 2, and we're going to be talking all about harvesting and cooking and preserving things from your own edible garden. And speaking of edible gardens, I am actually hosting this podcast episode from my very own edible garden. I'm outside doing that today. It's actually very nice today. Dry. I was commenting on a friend's status the other day on Facebook, and we talked about, you know, what your gardens look like, and she made a joke about the rain, and I said that, you know, whenever I go outside of my garden, I hear the theme from Clint Eastwood's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which ironically is how some things are looking out here in the garden, is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's been a great growing season. However, it has been a very dry growing season towards the latter part of summer, and it still is quite dry. We could definitely use some rain showers. But I've kept up with the watering. There have been minimal water restrictions in our own area, and I have been watering and keeping up, and I've actually had a very good harvest thus far. So we'll see how the fall harvest is, starting off with a much drier season than the summer harvest was. But today, we're going to be talking about harvesting from the garden, then we're going to talk about cooking from the garden, and then we're going to talk about preserving from the garden, canning or freezing, which is my preference. I love to freeze versus can. There are some things that are better for canning, and there are some things that are just better for freezing. So we're going to talk all about that. So I hope, with me hosting this from the outdoors, you will pardon the occasional sound from the crickets, which I just think is ongoing. Or the flutter of the wind that might be going against my computer screen that always seems to be an issue. But it's not really that windy today, so hopefully that won't be a problem. So let's get right into harvesting. This season has been a really good season for harvesting because it was so dry in the spring. I actually harvested most of my stuff about 2 weeks earlier than what's anticipated. So it gave my fall crop a really good head start, you know, to get a good jump on the upcoming frosts. And I did push for a couple things that can tolerate a couple hard frosts, but not too many. But, you know, I was pushing it, trying to get it into the 120, 150 day maturity season. So we'll see how they turn out. I guess it's a little experiment more than anything. But when harvesting, I planted so many things this year. I planted cabbages, I planted potatoes, sweet potatoes, when they're not related, believe it or not. Sweet potatoes are actually a member of the morning glory family, which is very interesting. Anyway, back to what I planted. I planted peppers, a plethora of tomatoes, cucumbers, pickling cucumbers, Swiss chard, kale, zucchini, onions, garlic, spring onions, corn. I planted a new hybrid of red corn, which is not an heirloom, but it's very beautiful and it's very sweet. I planted a variety of gourds, the giant pumpkins, different heirloom pumpkins, sunflowers. I planted a ton of herbs. And this year, I really tried to do it as organic as possible. I did not use any pest control. We do have some problems with slugs, but not really that much of a problem. But I planted enough that if they wanted to have some, they could. But I did plant a lot of naturally repelling plants, the pest repellent plants, things like marigolds. Rabbits and deer hate the scent of marigolds. So if you plant them in amongst your edibles, they really do stay away from it. And I was surprised this year. My garden this year was my garden last year was a quarter of the size it is this year. Last year, it was a quadrant that I had. It was an 8x8 quadrant. Well, this year, I did a total of 4 8x8 quadrants. So it was a quarter of the size last year as it was this year. And it really wasn't that much more keeping up. You know, if you keep it weeded, keep it clean, it's very easy to do. And I encourage all of you to do it if you don't have a garden already. I think next year I'm going to actually double the size. So it'll be probably a 40 by 40 next year. And we'll just keep going from there. Cause I just don't think it's enough. I thought last year it wasn't enough. And this year I thought it would be enough. It's still not enough. And I could probably use twice as much stuff to really give myself the ideal amount of what I need. But I need to make sure I have the storage capacity for that first. And that's another thing you need to take into account. But when it comes to harvesting, you want to really stick to some basics. You want to choose veggies that are not too young, but that aren't too ripe. You don't want to get them overripe where they might be a little bit bitter or inedible. But you don't want to get them too young. So it's kind of like, you know, but you can eat veggies when they're young. I eat some of my cabbages when they're younger. They're not the heads that you get at your grocery store. They're much smaller. I'd say they're maybe about half the size. So when you look at a recipe and it says a medium size head of cabbage or a large head of cabbage, these are more on the small, medium sides. But the taste of them seems to be much sweeter than the varieties that you get at the grocery store. And that could be because they may be out of season or, you know, it could be various reasons for that. I did already pull up my potatoes. I like baby potatoes younger because I also think they're sweeter. So those are things that you can pull up earlier. You always have the option of doing. Those will always have a good flavor. I think the herbs, I wait till they're mature, but I don't wait. I try to get them all before the blossoms set. But some of them, the basils that I grow here, I have a Thai basil, the bush basil, cinnamon basil, Genovese basil, all these things, eventually they all do go to seed because it just, it produces way too much. You can't keep up with it. But really, if you could have fresh herbs all summer long, but it's a very attractive plant to actually grow in a flower garden. To harvest the basils and the other herbs here, all I do is I just take the leaf off of the stem. I cut a couple stems and I cut it down to its base pretty much. And on the ones that haven't gone to seed yet. And if a couple have, pull them off too because the flavor's not too bad on those either. And just go and take all the leaves off the stems. Don't include the stems and you're going to make like a herb slurry, I guess you could call it. And once you get, say you have your Thai basil, we're going to make a Thai basil slurry. So you'll take all the leaves off your stems and you'll take them into the kitchen and you'll want to, you know, rinse them off with water first. Put them in a food processor, like a Cuisinart or whatever brand you have, and add just a minuscule amount of water, less than a quarter cup, maybe a tablespoon at a time, and pulse it till it like looks almost like pesto. And then you go and you freeze in ice cube trays. Do not use the ice cube trays that you use to put ice cubes in your drinks with. Designate an ice cube tray, especially for herb use. You can do it with sage, rosemary, basil. You could do it with parsley if you wanted to, marjoram, whatever you have an abundance of that you know you're, oregano is another good one, you know you're not going to use in one season, just freeze it. And with the parsley, what I like to do, and these are all ideas from awaytogarden.com, Margaret, who's the curator of that blog, she has given me years of countless ideas on ways to preserve, and I'm just passing them along. But the parsley, I just take them again. I rinse them off. I cut it down to its base and it will regrow, during the growing season. It'll keep, shooting shoots out of the ground and parsley all summer long. And, I take the leaves off of that and I stuff it down into a freezer bag, and I just kind of make a log shape, and then I roll it tightly, put rubber bands around it, and freeze it. And then throughout the winter, whenever I need a disc of parsley to go into potato soup or whatever, I just cut it off and throw the frozen disc right in the potato soup, and it's fresh parsley. And it's not the flavor of the dried parsley. It's flavorful parsley that just tastes like it's in season. It's really good to do. Another thing I do with the harvesting, that was sort of a preserving tip, but with harvesting, you know, I also take the tomatoes. I grow a lot of tomatoes here. If you're having problems troubleshooting with a late season blight, or if you have problems with your tomatoes rotting on the vine, maybe there's something wrong with the plant. There could be some amending that you have to do in the soil itself, or maybe it's just the conditions the plant is in. And if things are rotting on the vine, what you might want to do, or rotting as they are ripening, take off the tomato when it's green, and you can let it ripen in your windowsill, and it won't rot like it was rotting on the vine. But if sometimes it could be because you're overwatering or not enough water. Tomatoes are kind of temperamental, but once you get a good growing season of getting them down pat, you really know and understand them. So that's what I do. I also stress that when you are harvesting your stuff, you know, I said about growing, taking things off the vine when they're young. Some things that's actually a good thing to do, like your cucumbers and your zucchini and your eggplants, because they all have pretty prominent seeds inside of them. And if you wait till they get too big, a lot of that, mass of the vegetable itself is just seeds, and the seeds are somewhat tough, they're bitter, they're inedible. So what I do is I just pull them off when they're younger, and you get a, like I said, you get a sweeter flavor. The seeds are minuscule and they don't really affect the flavor of your vegetable. And, you don't really have to scoop out the seeds then, and you get more vegetable, I think. Another thing I really stress, cannot stress enough, is that when you're harvesting and bringing them inside, the plants, the vegetables are supposed to have dirt on them. You're not going to be expecting the shiny produce you're getting from the grocery store, but you're going to be getting a much more flavorful radish, or a much more delicious carrot, or a better beet. And you don't need to buy the veggie wash. This, you know, water has, and a good vegetable brush have sufficed for pretty much centuries. And I think that's probably the best way to do it. So I would not be putting any synthetic washes or any vegetable or fruit washes on any of your plants. You want to try to grow a garden that's as organic as possible, and a veggie wash, even when you get it from the grocery store, don't buy that. That's a complete waste of money, and you're doing more harm than you're doing good. So that's one thing I absolutely stress. And when you're harvesting, this is kind of a garden maintenance tip, but say, for example, you're getting a cabbage out of your patch. Well, one cabbage seed will obviously grow one head of cabbage. So when you're done picking that head of cabbage, rip the entire plant out of the ground. It's not doing any good sitting in your garden besides eating up more nutrients that other plants might need. So I take it right out of the garden and I throw it right into the compost heap. Not only does this get your compost, keep it fed and keep it vibrant and healthy and very full of nutritious value for your plants next year, but it also lowers the fall cleanup that you're going to have to do. If you grow an extensive garden, just do this, you know, go out one evening. Even I do it right as I harvest. As soon as I pull the head of cabbage, I put the head of cabbage on one end and I pull the plant out and throw it right in the compost heap, and it's done. It's over with. I don't have to worry about it when I'm worried about leaf cleanup or whatever else I might, or perennial cutbacks or whatever. So that's another thing to keep in mind. So that pretty much covers harvesting, kind of a brief 101. If it looks like it's ripe, it probably is. Give it a try. I mean, lesson learned if it's not. So just, you know, gardening is just one big experiment, and that's something you have to keep in mind. So let's move on to cooking from the garden. Cooking from the garden, I always say fresh is best. If you're going to be making taking your cabbage heads out of your garden, use it for coleslaw. or, because when you have a fresh vegetable, you're getting all those phytochemicals, you're getting all those nutrients that are present in the vegetable at its fresh state. You're not cooking them out, because when you cook a vegetable, it not only does it soften it, or you might saute it and make it more, not cabbage, but you might saute something else, like, or you might roast a squash or whatever. Those nutrients cook out, just like alcohol cooks out during, like, if you add alcohol or wine to a dish, like if you add a white wine to a pasta sauce, that alcohol in that sauce cooks out. Well, the same thing can be said for the nutrients that are in vegetables. The nutrients that are present in your vegetables are being cooked out. And not all the nutrients, but a large amount. And that's why I always say it's best to eat fresh. Fresh is best. So if you can have a vine-ripened tomato, eat that. If you can have a vine-ripened cucumber, pick that over something that's been cooked, or you know, a zucchini even. Instead of making a zucchini lasagna, as delicious and as good as that is, or baked zucchini, try to eat it fresh. And you'll be surprised what playing with vinegar and olive oil can do for your stuff, adding a little bit of salt here and there. You can make really delicious salads. So don't be afraid to experiment in the garden. That's what you have a garden for. You can come up with some really delicious recipes that will become very nutritious and delicious family favorites in no time, I guarantee it. Something else you can do, and I just briefly talked about that, is roasting. Roasting is one of my favorite things to do from the garden. You know, I get a lot of phytochemicals from the stuff I do grow here and from the other vegetables I do eat that are fresh. But, you know, with things like squash, they are definitely more appetizing when they're roasted or cooked or boiled. So I roast a lot of mine, and I just basically cut the squash in half. And I scoop out the seeds, and I turn on my oven and preheat it to 375. You can use parchment paper, or one I talked about last week, a miracle worker for the oven, Silpats. It saves you money on parchment paper. So you put a Silpat down on the baking sheet, brush olive oil over the cut sides of the squash, and sprinkle a little bit of coarse sea salt or kosher salt, and a little bit of freshly ground pepper onto it, and roast it for 45 minutes to an hour. And literally you just bring it out of the oven, cool on a cooling rack till it's cool enough to handle, and then get a big bowl, and you can scoop all the flesh right into this. You know, you can scoop it right into a big bowl. And if you use a spaghetti squash, or commonly also known as winter squash, that can substitute as a pasta. I flavor that with herbs from the garden. I flavor that with ricotta cheese. And it's kind of like pasta without all the carbs to it. And it's really good. It doesn't have the starchiness, and it's just really delicious. Also packed with lycopene, another really good essential thing that you should probably incorporate more of into your diet. Same thing with beets. You know, beets are another good thing that are either good roasted or boiled. And you can pickle beets. There's a lot of things from the garden you can pickle you don't even realize you can pickle. And they're really good pickled. And that kind of goes into the canning and preserving side of things. But cooking from the garden, you can cook pretty much anything down. You know, roasted potatoes, you can bake your potatoes, you can boil your potatoes, sweet potatoes, same kind of thing. I grew fennel this year, and I have a couple apples that haven't been touched by the pest infestation because I did not spray my apple trees this year. But apple and fennel soup is really good. And that's couldn't really honestly be easier. You basically cook down your apple, or you cook down your fennel. You can even put it in a food processor and puree it till it's soft. Delicious. I mean, it's kind of like this licorice apple infused soup. It screams autumn. And if you're looking for a seasonal meal to have that's very easy to prepare, definitely something to have in your repertoire. And definitely something you should try to grow next year is fennel. It's good for some things that you have to really, be a fan of the anise family, something that resembles highly licorice. So those are things that you can cook from the garden. Obviously, you can cook your own homemade tomato sauce. When you look at a recipe and you see everything is now canned. You have to can, you know, use canned tomatoes, 28 ounces of canned tomatoes. Well, you don't really have to use that. If you have homegrown tomatoes, just substitute that for the tomatoes that are in your recipe. One thing you have to remember, though, is that your canned tomatoes have a lot of sodium, a lot of salt in the canned good. So you aren't getting that salt in your fresh tomato. So you might have to adjust that more. You might have to add a teaspoon or so of salt to your recipe. But do it to taste. Don't add too much, because you can always add too little and add too, but you can never add too much and then take away. So, keep that in mind. Once you have fresh tomato sauce made with fresh backyard tomatoes that you grew yourself, I guarantee you're never, ever going to want to go back. And which takes us into our next chapter, very brief, and that is preserving. You can preserve pretty much anything, and my favorite thing to do is freeze. Anything that you can, you can pretty much freeze. There are some things that are great for canning, and I like to pickle things a lot. You can pickle peppers, you can pickle hot peppers, you can pickle cucumbers, which are also commonly known as pickles. You can get them in various shapes and sizes. You can get cucumbers especially that will grow to appropriate pickling sizes. You can pickle beets, pickle carrots, pretty much anything you can pickle. You just have to have the right combination. And there's a repertoire of recipes for pickling goods online. You can find a lot of stuff. When you go to get your canning supplies, the Ball Jar Company, who is the nation's largest supplier of canning goods, sells what they call the Blue Book. It's the Ball Jar Blue Book, and it's chocked full of recipes for canning, and I highly suggest you get it. It kind of gives you how-tos and links online that you can watch videos on how to start canning. So if you are the novice, you'll be an expert by the end of the season. If you have a friend or a neighbor that cans religiously, you can maybe ask them if maybe you can sit in during when they do that. If they're canning corn one week, ask them if you can sit in and watch them so you can learn how to do it next season for your family. Another really good idea to keep in mind. But I love to freeze things. And I think that's a common misperception. People are like, you freeze things? I'm like, well, yeah, of course you can freeze things. And they're good for, they're preferably good to be used within 6 months. But you can use them up to a year for most items. And what people don't realize is when you're freezing an item, when it's in season, you're getting the flavor of that item at its peak. And when you freeze it, it preserves that freshness. The canning variety, it's a great alternative to freezing if you don't have the freezer space for it. But if you can find a freezer at a tag sale that's been slightly used or that's in great condition, I suggest you get it and just start freezing things from your garden or from the orchards or from the farmer's market. You can freeze peaches, tomatoes, berries, and have fresh smoothies all winter long. Zucchini, which a lot of people think you can't do, but you don't. You skin the zucchini, put it in your food processor, and puree it. And I stuff that into freezer jars. They're like plastic containers, also made by the Ball Jar Company. And you can put them in your freezer and just label and date them so you know to use them within a year. And you can have freshly baked zucchini bread in the middle of January. You can have freshly baked zucchini bread in the middle of spring before the zucchini are in season. And you're going to have that peak season flavor. So it's something really to keep in mind. And a lot of people think, you know, you can tomatoes. Well, of course you can. Or you freeze tomatoes. Well, of course you can freeze tomatoes. You can can tomatoes as well. But again, that flavor sort of does fade away versus when you freeze it. You know, when you can it, the flavors fade. Freezing, the flavors stay. So all I do is I have a rapid pot of boiling water, and I score an X on the bottom of each tomato. And this can apply to any peach or anything that you have to skin before you freeze it. And pretty much you should skin anything before you freeze it, excluding berries. The berries you can put right into the freezer. Just wash them. If you're freezing strawberries, haul them out first. Take the tops off and get that hull out. And but yeah, score an X on the bottom of your tomatoes or your peaches or whatever stone fruit or vegetable you're freezing that's in that circular shape and has a skin on it. And dip it into the boiling water, and you boil it for 1 to 2 minutes. And some of them, depending on how rapidly your water is boiling, it could be 30 seconds to a minute. And take them out with an Asian strainer or a slotted spoon and sit them off to the side in like a colander or something like a strainer. and let the water soak off and wait about, you know, a couple minutes so they're cool enough to handle. That can be anywhere from 5 minutes to 10 minutes, depending on whether or not you want to have second degree burns on your hand. just go ahead, take the skin off and put them right into the freezer bag. Remember, before you freeze things in the freezer, to make sure you get all the air out. So close the bag as you and get the Ziploc. Make sure that you get the ones that click. The Ziploc makes them. You can find a different variety. I like Ziploc. I've only ever used Ziploc, not because it's the best or anything, although it's worked very well for me. I just have only used that, and it's given me good results, and that's something I don't want to risk, you know, is having a freezer-burnt produce in the winter. I don't want to have that. So I stick to what I know, and I use the Ziploc freezer bags. They're really good. About $3.30 per box at Walmart or a Supercenter. Look for when they're on sale and stock up, because that's one thing that does not go bad is freezer bags. So again, freezing is always the best. Look for freezers when you can. Make sure you have this before you start putting stuff on the shelves. Look at your freezer. Evaluate what you can use, what you can't use. Do a freezer clean out every season. If things are past their prime, don't hold on to them. Or if they are past their prime, you just can't part with them, cook them that week, get rid of them, and make some space. Because if you don't have space for your goods to store and preserve, you're going to have to rely on the food from the supermarkets in the winter. If this is an issue, good. But on those snow days when it's hard to get to the grocery store, it's really a comfort to go to the freezer and get out a bag of frozen tomatoes that I froze from my own garden and put them into a pot and make homemade tomato sauce and just go to the pantry and get something, some kind of pasta that's out there and just make a delicious homemade meal on a really cold winter day. And with that said, I hope you enjoyed this segment and this podcast all about harvesting, cooking, and harvesting from the garden. Sort of a basic step. Obviously, I could go on for hours about this, but I try to keep this under 30 minutes each time. And I hope you'll join me next week for our Halloween entertaining podcast. We're going to talk all about the most ghastly ideas from, oh my gosh, really ghoulish drinks you can serve, decor in your home to really set a macabre mood for your next Halloween event, ghastly entrees and appetizers that you can serve to your guests, and Halloween theme parties that we're going to be talking about that haven't really been done too much, but really make it less work on you, the host, and a lot of fun for everybody involved. So I hope you'll join me next Friday, September 10th, as we talk about Halloween entertaining, and I hope you all have a great week. Take care.